One.
Go.
Boop. Block Talk Radio.
Does that bring back memories?
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
No, it does say that.
You got Blog Talk Radio embedded in all this stuff, all over the place.
I need to hide something here. Yeah. Oh, if I hide that, I think I go off the scene. There you are. Okay. Yeah, it's still in that video. Mm. Oh, it's on our little logo too on the corner. Huh.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I have to make some adjustments. Back to the editing board.
Yeah. Back to the in the shop.
Yep.
So here we are live on Blog Talk Radio. On Blog Talk Radio, look at me. Live on Restream. it's hard to break a habit. We did it for what, 14 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
And it's hard to break that habit. We are on Restream. And if you're listening to this show, congratulations, because we're hearing that it's really hard to find our current shows. But we're working on that and trying to find a way to get this stuff out there and make it as listener friendly as it was previously. Mm-hmm. It is now 7:02 p.m. Eastern time on March 6, 2025. Sunday morning, we go daylight saving time. So be sure to set your clock ahead 1 hour. At 2 o'clock in the morning, which means you got to get up and set your alarm for about 5 till and get up, move the clock back an hour, and then go back to bed. So that's going to be more daylight in the evening for us, and it's going to be dark in the morning. I just saw a thing on TV that, when was it, last night? Yeah, last night, saying that daylight saving time throws off your inner clock rhythms, and there are more accidents on Monday after daylight saving time switches, people commuting, more accidents. They said that depression goes up and all sorts of stuff. So I am going to see it stay on year round personally, but that's just my thought. But we should go on daylight saving time Sunday morning and see what happens and see if they start talking about keeping on year round again. It's got to be passed by Congress though, so they can't agree on anything, so I doubt it'll happen. So just some information for you tonight, some stories and things that I have seen and I've compiled for you. Nothing I lost all of mine at the top of my screen. You know, you have all of your stuff at the top. You can click on it and all. And glossary disappeared.
Ooh.
I don't know why. Well, I do know what cat step board.
Who's going after the mouse? Where's it?
Yeah, I'm going after the little thing on screen. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Is that what I want? philosophy. Yes. Yeah, here we are. Do you remember where we ended? That was...
Yes, purely by memory. I remember you saying... I remember... Yes. I remember you saying that this week it would be cane or cane pruning along those lines.
Ah, I remember that now since you mentioned that. So let me see what I can find on cane or cane pruning. And there you go. Okay. Let's do some glossary here, wine term glossary. Cane, C-A-N-E, that is a branch of a vine. So they don't call it a branch on a grapevine, they call it a cane. Which, yeah, okay. Cane pruning, a vine training system in which the vine's oldest canes are branches that are generally between 1 and 3 years old, and the majority of its younger canes are cut in the winter, leaving a number of designated canes for bud growth. Each surviving cane is left with a spur, which is a stub left by the cane cut at its base. That's confusing for me, and I know exactly what they're talking about. The canes that grow from these spurs will not be pruned in the following year. This method is generally preferred in cooler regions. They are doing some pruning right now out there. They're getting some of the canes. What you try to get is you try to get a canes that stretch out. You train these things to go on the trestles, and you try to get them to go out in the directions of the trestles. The trestles are set up to let maximum air flow through the vines. It's also maximum sunlight on the grapes when they are coming out. And you want something that's going to not shield or shade other grapes on the inside. And you want something that's going to be strong enough to hang on to the trestles, usually the wires that are coming out. They have the wires that stretch from one grapevine, grapevine to the next on the trestles. And these canes will grab a hold of it and do it. And then you prune them down so you have the best airflow and the best area for growth on the vine. Canopy. This is the green foliage of a grapevine that's on top of. This is the canopy, all the leaves. The canopy can be trimmed or thinned to manage the amount of air and sun reaching the fruit. That's what I was just talking about. This improves fruit quality, increasing the yield, and controlling disease. If you have too much canopy, you don't have enough airflow and all that, it opens it up to get moisture on the grapes, which causes mildew and all sorts of problems. Also, it invites bugs in and everything else to start eating on it. So your cane pruning and canopy pruning and all that stuff, very, very critical. You have yourself a good vineyard man that can handle that stuff, that knows what he's doing on that stuff, is invaluable. He can... really, if he does it right, and he can get you some good quality grapes by his how he handles the grapevines out there. So it's an important thing, how they handle it. I'm not trying to say it's just men, because there are some women who run vineyards who are excellent also. Cap, C-A-P. This is the thick layer of skins, stems, and seeds that forms at the surface of fermenting red wine. Cap management, or breaking up the cap to increase contact between the skins and the liquid, is important since red wines extract color and flavor from the skins. You throw them in the vat, the skins and thick layers float to the top, and so you have to punch them down and mix them up with it. Capsule. This is the metal or plastic protective coating that surrounds the top of the cork and the bottle. Before pulling out the cork, at least the bottom portion should be removed to expose the cork and the lip of the bottle. I said bottom, top portion. Yeah, top portion. Carbonic maceration. This is most frequently associated with Beaujolais. This is a method of producing light-bodied, fresh, and fruity red wines. Instead of crushing the grapes and releasing the juices to be fermented by yeast, whole grape bunches are placed in a tank, and the oxygen is displaced by carbon dioxide. Fermentation starts on an intracellular level inside the berry, producing some alcohol as well as fruity aromatics. In practice, the weight of the grapes on the top crushes the grapes on the bottom, and yeast ferment the juice. The wine is partly a product of carbonic maceration and partly of traditional yeast fermentation. Okay, you follow that? It's the releasing of the juices to be fermented by the yeast. This lets crush in there and gives you a lighter, fruitier flavors to the wine. Carboy, sometimes referred to as a demijohn. A carboy is a non-reactive vessel, usually glass or plastic, used to ferment alcoholic beverages. Due to the relatively small size, typically ranging from 20 to 60 liter, and portability, they are most properly used in home winemaking, but are also employed by commercial winemakers for experimental lots or test batches. You know, grab the carboy. I used to do that. I used to do some experimental batches with the carboy just to see how something's going to come out. You have to do very, very stringent record keeping when you do stuff like that, though, because you get something on the carboy and it comes out just perfect. You have to be sure, okay, I'm using a 30 liter carboy and I'm going to use a 500 liter barrel. You need to figure out exactly what you're putting into it and match the amounts. Okay, casa, C-A-S-A, casa, Spanish for house. In wine terms, it's synonymous with bodega. So a casa or a bodega in wine, same thing. Case, C-A-S-E. A case of wine in the United States typically contains 9 liters, which is equivalent to 12 standard size 750 bottles of wine. The size of wineries is most frequently measured by the number of cases produced annually. And they're talking 9 liter cases. This is the standard measurement for cases, 9 liter case. Which is 12 750 milliliter, or it is 4 150. And that's not right. 6 150. 6 150. And it just 9 liter is typically, no matter what size bottle you use, that's typically classified as the case. Okay. Casin. Is am I pronouncing that right? It's got a little thing. Casin. Oh, well, I wasn't pronouncing it right. Cassian, C-A-S-E-I-N, Cassian. It's a dairy-based protein used in the fining process. Cassian is particularly effective as clarifying cloudy or off-colored white wines. Now, the thing is, the key to this definition is that first word, dairy-based. This is why some people think that wine labels should contain warnings, because some people are allergic to dairy. And if they use Cassian to clarify the wine, then it's a dairy-based. That's stretching it for allergies, but some people are that allergic, so there is a possibility. So, but Cassian, it's used as for it's a protein used for fining wines. Cask number, C-A-S-K number. Excuse me. This is a term sometimes used to designate special wines, as in Stag's Leap, Wine Cellars Cask 23, but often applied to ordinary wines to identify a separate lot or brand. And it's synonymous with the bin number, cask number or bin number. It's, you see this on bottles all the time, cask number 46 or bin number 32, and is designating that they're coming from these particular casks or bins. It's a good idea if you're purchasing a case of it to be sure that all of them are the same. Sometimes they can get mixed inadvertently, but they can. But the quality should be the same. When you designate a cask or a bin, then you should have the same quality in every one of the wines. Cava, C-A-V-A. This is a Spanish term for sparkling wine made using the traditional method in Champagne. Cave, French term for wine cellar. You have a wine cellar in the United States, you have a cave in France. Cedary. This denotes the smell of cedar wood associated with mature Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet blends aged in French or American oak. This has a cedary smell. You probably smelled it before and didn't know really what you were smelling too. That happens a lot in some of the stuff. Cellar, C-E-L-L-A-R. The room in a winery where wine is made or stored can often refer to a personal wine collection in a residence. My personal wine cellar, yeah. Which is, you think of cellar, you think of basement, but it's not particularly that. Cellared by. This means the wine was not produced at the winery where it was bottled. It usually indicates that the wine was purchased from another source. This is something you got to look at too. If you're buying a wine from any winery, check the back and see if it was bottled, made and bottled by. If it was made and bottled by that winery, then everything was done there. But if it says cellared, that means another winery did it and they're just slapping their label on it. And you see that more than you think. I checked on that once. I was on a mission and I was surprised at the number of bottles that are cellared by other companies. They don't even always tell you who it is. So, okay. What's this? This is a French term for grape variety and it is pronounced cépage. Cépage is a French term for grape variety. It's spelled C-E with a mark of the P-A-G-E, cépage. Chai is a French term for wine cellar. French has cave, chai, they have lots of terms for wine cellars. Let me do a couple more here and then I'll get some other stuff I want to share with you. Chapitalization. C-H-A-P-T-A-L-I-Z-A-T-I-O-N. Chapitalization. The addition of sugar to juice before and or during fermentation. This is used to boost sugar levels in underripe grapes and alcohol levels in the subsequent wines. Sugar, when fermented, turns to alcohol. So if the grapes don't have enough sugar to start with, you add a little bit of sugar to it, which causes it to raise the alcohol level. It doesn't particularly mean you're going to taste a sweeter wine unless they don't ferment all the sugar out. What the purpose is probably to do that. It continues, common in northern European countries where the cold climates may keep grapes from ripening. But this is forbidden in southern Europe, including southern France and all of Italy, and also California. So you can't do that in those areas. There may be rules, laws, stuff like that, in big wine-producing areas in other places of the United States, Oregon, Washington, New York, stuff. I don't know. I'm not aware of it. I do know that it is a rather common practice, more so than we think, to bring the alcohol up, because the grapes don't always hit that ideal Brix or sugar levels when you're picking them. And so chaplization will help bring that alcohol level up and give you a better balance to the wine. So chaplization. This next one is Charmat. Okay. Charmat. Charmat. This is a less expensive mass production method of producing bulk quantities of sparkling wine. The second fermentation takes place in a pressurized tank rather than in a bottle, decreasing lees contact, and the lees is all the stuff that's in there, and producing larger, coarser bubbles. The wine is filtered under pressure and then bottled. Also known as the bulk process or tank method. Wines made this way cannot be labeled Méthode Champenoise. Or Champenoise? Champenoise. So, Charmat is just another method for bulk bubbly. And some of the wines that you find being produced in areas like Italy, particularly, and areas of the United States use this method. Okay, Chateau will be the one we start with next week. Chateau, which is pretty simple for us to remember, but we know Mike will remember it, so we don't have to worry about it too much. So Chateau is our next word on.
Is that Chateau's with a SH and it ends in an X?
Yeah. Chateau.
Chateau. Sure.
AUX.
Yeah, we'll try that. Okay. Make sure.
Yeah. Good. All right. Interesting things in this Chronicle. They always have some very good articles about wine in the Chronicle. Again, that's why I subscribe to it, basically, and also to keep up with the baseball teams out there in the West Coast. They publish more than they do here in the East Coast. So, but this one really caught my eye. Todd Henderson wants to be known as the guy who makes the most expensive wine in the world. And I read that and I go, why? You know, okay, so you make the most expensive wine in the world. Does that mean that anybody's going to buy it? Well, he has attitude. Unlike other high-end inventors, where explicit discussions of money are considered gauche. Anderson wears his price tags proudly. He has a Napa Valley winery called Ghost Horse, and he sells new releases between $500, and that's how much a Chardonnay goes for, and $5,500. That's Premonition. This is the prices of his Cabernet Sauvignons. Went to visit Anderson in St. Helena for a tasting. That will be $750, $1,000, or $5,000 per person, depending on which option you choose. The fees are not waived if you buy a bottle, but they do include a charcuterie, if that's how it's pronounced, charcuterie platter, a cheese platter. Yeah, okay. Now, you know, I read this and I'm going, yeah, all right. Now, how many people are actually going to do that? Anderson is preparing to release his most audaciously priced wine yet. Effrayant, E-F-F-R-A-Y-A-N-T, which means scary in French, is still in the barrel. But when it's ready in 2027, all three cases of it, he plans to charge $25,000 a bottle. And we're all chuckling and shaking our head when you hear that. You know, why? The label is an update of the silver equine etching on his other bottles, features a horse on fire, its mane ablaze in orange. Ask him what makes this wine so distinctly special, and he demurs, refusing to divulge trade secrets. Yeah, well, you know, if somebody asks me why I'm charging $25,000 a bottle of wine, I'll go, you know, it's a trade secret. You know, and the trade secret is I want that big bucks in my pocket. I can't see it being worth $25,000 in the furthest stretches of the imagination. But that's just me editorializing again, and I do that a lot doing on these. With Burgundy's Domaine de la Romane Conti selling for around $20,000 on release, Efferent may indeed catapult Anderson to the superlative status he's been chasing for 25 years. If the pricing scheme sounds brazen, that's by design. Anderson is a braggadocious presence. He's 6'5" tall, and he wears a black 10-gallon cowboy hat. He's prone to unabashed sound bites. Things like, the biggest problem in Napa Valley today is no one knows how to farm anymore. And the downfall of our industry is the distributors. And restaurant wine lists suck today. Yeah, that's going to generate lots of friends for him. Probably the strangest thing about Ghost Horse is that it may not have many people that have heard of it. Which is true. I never heard of Ghost Horse. I saw this article. You heard of Screaming Eagle and Scarecrow, but Ghost Horse is pretty much unknown, which I agree with the article that where it said that. Sort of came out of nowhere. Dave Parker, CEO of Napa Rare Wine, says it moved a significant amount over the years. Ghost Horse is starting to become more and more noticeable. He says the major differentiation from Screaming Horse and others like that is that he views his peers' accessibility. Anyone can visit Ghost Horse as long as they pay. And Anderson hosts every visitor himself. He doesn't have a crew that does it. Anderson was working as a geologist when his father was a dentist, and he decided to buy a vineyard. Father and son drove around scouting for unplanted land, and when properties weren't for sale, they offered ended up buying 40-acre parcel in Con Valley, east of St. Helena, and called it Anderson's Con Valley Vineyards. Con Valley developed a reputation for good wine at a reasonable price. But as the 90s progressed, Anderson noticed a new trend in Napa, the cult Cabernets. Harlan, Screaming Eagle, Colgan, Aurora, and Bryant had entered the scene. These wines produced the minuscule qualities and at $36 to $65 exorbitantly priced for their time. And the cult wineries were shrouded in secrecy, which was a big thing. They didn't tell you how and what. His own goal became clear. He decided he wanted to create a wine that is as good as any in the world and have the accessibility of the owner winemaker when you bought it. It would be fully separate from Con Valley. So in 2000, he bought a small vineyard in Napa's Combsville area, and he planted 1 acre. He wanted to create something that would really get people talking. And so he Googled most expensive wine in the world. And he said that a visitor at Con Valley showed so much interest in wine that he decided to bring them into the separate Ghost Horse Cave and extract a taste of cab from the barrel. The guy asked how much. He replied, $1,500 a bottle. The guy said he'd take 2 cases as futures. I mean, just like that. That's how it started. No one's really tested this price point the way he's doing it. There are a lot of people in Napa trying to compete in the $400 to $500 range now, but not at this level. He ages most of his red wines in 200% new French oak, 2 years in a new barrel, then 2 years in a second new barrel. Those 4 years of aging introduce more oxygen to the wine than an inert bottle would, softening its edges. So, word got out. Wine Advocate's website picked it up. Bloggers and serial message board posters mocked him at first, speculating that the whole thing was a joke. But then Anderson was able to meet a lot of them, and he charmed them and said, no, it's not a joke. He served cigars and bourbon. He barbecued beer can chicken and told them all the story. The Ghost Horse wines are the real deal, he said, not to mention that the best chicken of any of us ever had at the time when they had the beer can chicken. Beer can chicken is very good. If you've never had it, look up beer can chicken on the internet and make yourself one. They are delicious. Okay. Today, Anderson said the Ghost Horse business is booming. He makes only about 300 cases a year. The Chardonnay and 5 Cabernets, 4 of which have ghosty names, Phantom, which sells for $1,650 for the 2020 vintage, Apparition, $2,750, Spectre, $3,850, and the $5,500 Premonition. I'm shaking my head. You can't see it, but then. Today, Anderson said that, Excess Anderson has always been part of the pitch. He has sweetened the deal. Anyone who purchases Premonition gets a coin that grants them 1 year of excess to the Syndicate, his version of a wine club. Syndicate members affords the opportunity to buy even pricier wines. Currently, the 2006 and 2009 vintages at $7,500 a piece. Here, I'll give you coins. You can spend $7,500 for my wine. Oh, okay. Plus access to many events that Anderson hosts throughout the world, like the January 9th dinner he threw for 22 people at Mar-a-Lago. Security was high, he said. They checked for bombs under the hood. The slumping sales affecting the wine industry are not affecting Ghost Horse, though Khan Valley is seeing fewer visitors. As his peers in Napa Valley cut costs and close, he is doubling down. He intends to release only 3 cases of the $25,000 efferent, even though the barrel contains about 25 cases worth. What does he intend to do with the rest? Blend it into other Cabernets, he said. His ability to continue charging these prices is not guaranteed, especially in an era where stylistic preferences have been gravitating away from the ultra-ripe wines. If we enter an age of both vigneous and economic austerity, will Ghost Horse lose some of its luster? Anderson is not deterred. There's a huge market out there for a bottle of $25,000 wine on release, he said. Or at least a market for 3 cases. Unbelievable. $25,000. I can't see how anyone could justify $25,000 and without tasting it. If he's bottling 3 cases and selling 3 cases, surely he's going to bottle a 4th just for anyone who might want to buy a bottle or 2. Okay, I want to buy 2 bottles of this $25,000 wine, but I'm not about to do it until I taste it. Okay, here. And he has his tasting bottles. I can understand that. Okay. I was talking years ago on the winery. There was somebody came in and they were out in Nevada, Pahrump Winery, which sadly has closed down since then. But Pahrump Winery in Nevada had a wine. Gee, I've got a blank now. I can't think of the name of it. But they made a wine that I got a bottle of it. We exchanged some wines back and forth. I sent them my orange and my key lime, and they sent me a bottle of the wine that they had. And it was fantastic. It was really, really good. They did an excellent job on it. I wrote them or I emailed them, and I said, "This is fantastic. You outdid yourself." And they paid me the compliments back on the orange and the key lime, which I wasn't seeking, but I appreciate it. But I didn't find out the price of it. I had somebody come in about a month and a half after I tasted that, and he saw the bottle, because I used to display bottles from each state, and he saw the bottle, and he says, I almost got that. I was at Pahrump Winery. I was out there, and he says, "I almost got that, but they were not tasting it. It was one that you had to buy a bottle of it to taste it." And he said, "And I could not see buying a $120 bottle of wine without tasting it first." Now, here's a guy who couldn't spend $120 without tasting it first. And this guy is offering a $25,000 bottle of wine. I'm sure he's going to offer tastings from the rest of his batch. I mean, that I told the guy he should have bought it because it was well worth whatever they were asking for it. But this is people's attitude. I'm not going to spend this much money on a bottle of wine that I can't at least try. And $25,000 for a bottle of wine, it's still, every time excuse me, every time I look at the cost to that, it baffled me. So, out of the San Francisco Chronicle that came just a couple of days ago, actually. While we're doing Chronicle, let me find another Chronicle here I can share with you. Okay. Where are we? There we are. Okay. Just some quick hits here on articles out of the Chronicle on the wine region. renowned Napa Valley vintner is sued to stop the sale of his share in a winery. He was told that, he found out that his shares were being auctioned after they were already sold. Tuck Beckstoffer, he's the son of the famed grape grower Andy Beckstoffer, was ordered in 2022 to give up his 30% ownership in Amulet Estate because they had to sell. It was foreclosed on because his partners were spending the winery's fund on luxury items like luxury cars and private jets. And also the arbitration directed him to pay $5.1 million in damages to the winery. But he filed because he said that he was not informed of this stuff. He said that the owner's state law requires that the owners be received a 10-day notice before property is foreclosed on. He said he didn't know about it after the sale was all done and everything was finished. He's trying to get a reversal of it. Amulet Estate is valued at $3.6 million. They were unable to pay the multi-million dollar judgment. And so he's asking for his share back on it. Good luck. Stuff like that usually don't go by way of the individual. When something is foreclosed on, it's usually just bad news for the person who is trying to get their money back. But when those things were, the winery was just spending more money than they had for all sorts of stuff. Let's see. Lots of wineries are closing in San Francisco. Getting articles almost daily that something else is being closed down. Here's one, an injunction. It's the latest in a lengthy, complicated feud in Napa between Hoops. I think I told you about that last week. And some others. Hoops is forced to pay $8 million if they want to stay open. They're saying that, you know, that they can't keep up with that stuff. It's just too much money. There was another one. Here's this is Prima Donna. No, not Prima Donna. Prima Materia is scheduled to close. And this is in Lake County. 13 grape varieties are planted, and they have a lot of Italian grapevines there. They opened up a tasting room in 2019, offering $10 tastings and $16 bottles, but they just haven't been able to recover from the pandemic, which seems to be a problem with a lot of these wineries. The pandemic really hurt them. Distributors dropped off, visitations declined, and they're just not getting the traffic that they used to. It's not picking up completely back to normal yet. And you would think so after 5 years. But Prima Materia is becoming a victim of the pandemic even 5 years later. Let's see. Oh, although the Lamarinda AVA, Lamarinda, that has to be in Lake County, has more than 100 vineyards. Wow. That's amazing. 100 vineyards. These are all little small dinky things, but it's all part of the region. But there's another one that's closing down that, again, they're blaming the pandemic and not turning it around. But I think it's more than that, because here's another article of the San Francisco Chronicle that's talking about the downturn of wineries. It's tastings in 2013 were averaging around $20. It's risen up since then slowly to around $50. But the visitors are dropping off, and this is hurting all of them. The traffic to wineries has slowed down to the point where some wineries have cut back on their tasting fees, are offering cheaper deals and stuff, simply because they're not getting the traffic they used to. It is overall in California, particularly in Napa, Sonoma, Lake Counties, Mendocino, these areas are really starting to feel the effects of a, well, I don't want to say a dry movement, but it's almost like that's what it is. That they're dropping back to tasting costs of $15. And that's unheard of, because some of them are charging, you know, we're charging $50, $60 for tastings. And they're trying to create foot traffic, trying to create people. And it's, well, here's one that was this in 2012, the average tasting fee was $8.50. And by 2023, it increased to $38, with Napa Valley charging $75 and Sonoma $43. But now they have dropped about half that on all those to try to generate traffic. And it's not working as well as they hoped. It's just really the wineries are slowing down there. So they're seeking visitors, as the article says. Let's see. So I'm going to read up on that and talk about that sometime. There's a new Luxe donut shop and wine cafe is opening up in San Francisco. That should be something that's interesting. Donuts and wine. Buttermilk cake donuts. Those look good. They did a good job on those. But they also serve wines. Wine, beer, coffee, tea, but they say that sweet wines are going very well. The sweeter style wines are booming with these donuts. It's a great combination. That's something else that's happening in San Francisco in the wine industry. Let's see if there's something else here. I talked about that. All right. Back to this. And let me go back to this. I'm trying to maneuver around here. What was I? Oh, here we go. Courtney McGrinney, Shahisi, Courtney Shahisi, Schiessi, Iessl, I'm sorry. So Courtney Shahisi McGrinney, M-A-G-R-I-N-I, writes articles on wine. I have her pop up on here like every couple of days. She'll do stuff. She writes for 750 daily, and a very good site. I enjoy it. They have a lot of information and stuff on there that is really interesting. And it's it has quite a bit of information. Here's an article on read and talk to you about the science of the petrol aromas in wine. it's been talked about quite a bit. I'm going to get that. But what we know about new tariffs on American wines, and this is something that everyone's concerned about with the tariffs and what's going on with the tariffs and how it will affect wines and our costs and stuff. Well, as of right now, we don't know. You know, this article is punched in 6 or 7 different what's that say? March 4th, 6 or 7, well, more than that. I guess there's about 10 different ones here, but different headlines from Canada, Mexico, and EU about what's happening with tariffs and what's going on with tariffs, and nobody knows what's going to happen with the cost, our cost. Some of these articles, and I'm not getting political here, I just explain things I've read. Some of these articles say that if these tariffs come in, we will end up paying more for everything that we get, particularly wine. And since we're about wine, let's talk about wine. We will pay more for every bottle of wine. Another economist will say, no, we won't. They will absorb the price. Our prices shouldn't go up, because if they go up very much, then people will stop buying, because wine is a luxury item and it's not something they have to have. And if they start jumping wines from other countries up too much on the price on the shelf, then we will just stay with American wines because they are there, they're convenient, and they're good. So, I don't know. The last time Donald Trump tried to put in a tariff, when he was the president last time, it didn't really affect the cost of wine that much. And then he withdrew the tariffs and it was all moot. So this time, he's just given a flat tariff across the board. But when it comes to different items, we buy them from overseas. We buy them from different countries and stuff, Canada, Mexico, and everywhere else. So the tariffs will be affecting the prices, I think. But wine, if it does affect the prices, it will drive people to buy domestic. So instead of getting a bottle of French wine that used to cost the same as an American wine, if that French wine goes up $1.50 and the American wine does not, people, I think, will gravitate toward the American wine. That's just my opinion on that. That's not an economist saying that this is going to happen, because you can't figure out people. But I think it very possibly could be that it's going to drive people to drink more domestic. I don't think the prices are going to go up that much, though, because wineries around the world know that we make good wine here in the States. So if they start tacking on a whole bunch of cost, it's going to cause people to buy domestic and stop buying wine from overseas. So I think they're going to start absorbing some of the tariff cost. I'm not an economist. I am just editorializing here, if you will. So we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen. We'll see if these tariffs continue on. We'll see if the prices go up, what's going to happen. But if I'm used to going out buying something from Europe, Chile, say I like a Carmenere from Chile, if I buy a Carmenere from Chile and that price jumps up $2 or $3, and I can buy a Barbera from California for less than that. I love Barberas, Sauvignon, Cab Franc, rather. I love Cab Francs. I can buy one of those and enjoy it as much. So that's just what I would do. That's just my opinion. I don't know what's going to happen on this. Tariffs are going to affect all sorts of spirits, not just wine. But I you know, and it could be the same result with wine. I mean, you can buy Canadian whiskeys or you can buy American whiskeys. And it's just a matter of, you know, I only drink Canadian Club. Well, okay, then if the tariff's going to pay more for it. But you can also buy some great American whiskeys instead of Canadian Club. That's okay. Enough with that. We'll see what happens down the road here. Right now, it's just everyone's curious. Everyone's trying to figure out what's going on, and everyone's posturing back and forth. So we'll see what happens. Okay. Okay, here's one I'll talk about quickly here before we end it for the night. There's the 7 best wines from women winemakers. This is according to people who are buying the wines. The 7 best wines from women winemakers. Boy, don't you just love these different names? Why can't there be stuff simple like Becker and Hunt? This is Noble Cara. It's a Toscana Rosato 2023 from Tuscany, Italy. And it is a wine made by, what is her name? Maria Soleil. And she is at Fico Montanino. Fico Montanino. I destroyed that name, didn't I? Here's the next one. Oh, this is easier. Elena Walsh, Gewurztraminer 2023 from Alto Adige, Italy, $35. Amavive Grenache 2023 from Alissos Canyon, Santa Barbara, $34. Here is Kelly Fox Nerthus 2022 from Willamette, Oregon, or Willamette Valley, Oregon, $17. Closer to 10. Let's see, only pasta. Drop of Sunshine. Well, that makes that much easier than all these others. Drop of Sunshine doesn't give a price. Treasury Wine Estates puts this out. Gonzales Wine Company, Oasis Vineyard White Malbec out of Portland, Oregon, $25. These are all women winemakers that are making these things. Soleil Vin de Bonted La Rosé. 2023 from Vin de France, $16.99, $17. Fossil and Fawn Dark Wave 2023. This is out of Willamette Valley, Oregon, $35. And that's it. Different wines from women winemakers that have been picked by people who drink them, not by critics, not by not by people out there, not by people out there who make a living and get part of it. These are people who drink these. So I guess if I can figure out a way to transfer this to our Facebook page, I'll do that. Can I? Yes. Share to Facebook. So there we go. And now, what do I do? It says Facebook. And Facebook. And let me see if it goes through and is posted on there. And if it is, then, yeah, create a post. Okay. Okay. The article. Oh, wait a minute. That lost it. What's on your mind? Okay. Let's just put from Thursday, March 6, 2025. That's all I need to put on that. Then I'll post it and share. Okay, it's on Wine Facebook. Or did it go on? No, it went on mine, not on All About Wine. Well, I'll have to do it again and put it on All About Wine. All right. Well, geez, I didn't even think that I was open on my page and not on a All About Wine page. So, okay, we're done for the night. I, after that movie, right there, I'll stop.
We were listening patiently for you to say, it's done, it's on the page, and I heard that.
I know.
Not quite.
Because I waited until it popped up, and this is my page. I don't want to know my page. I don't want to know about my page. Do it.
Yeah. It happens. All righty. Well, that's the end of tonight's show for Thursday, March the 6th, and we will see you all back here next week on March the 13th, I believe it is, will be at 7 p.m. If your smart devices, watches, and phones don't automatically change the time and you forget, we'll be on at 6 p.m. next week instead on your time. So keep that in mind. Let's just hope that you do change your clocks ahead on Sunday. For those of you who do, I think, what, like Arizona, there's a few places in some places,
Arizona,
in
Hawaii.
Indiana, some places they don't observe it. Lucky you. But those of you who do, Arizona, Hawaii, we'll be back 7 p.m. Eastern time. Mm-hmm. So tune in. Thank you all again, and have a great weekend. Be safe and enjoy wine, American wine.
Yeah,
we'll see y'all next time. Thank you. March 20th. All right, thank you. Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwine.com.
Don't we have an outro?
Were you talking? Oh.
No.
Are you talking in the background? I keep thinking about Monday's show, and I'm like, he's not 20 minutes behind again, is he? I was like, you were talking about something. I couldn't tell what it was. I go, I hope he's not just now hearing the intro, 2 minutes or whatever later. But anyway,
I wasn't hearing the intro though. That's what I was asking, or the outro. I couldn't hear it. I just wondered. Huh. Yeah.
allaboutwinebtr.com.
So you can't hear the thing playing now? Oh.
No, I can't.
Really? I wonder why.
No. Yeah.
I
don't know.
But you see it on your screen, right? Okay.
I see the thing.
It's kind of frozen now.
But ready to scroll and talking about it, but it's just frozen up. Yeah.
Let's get back up here. Skip the thing. There you go. Thank you for... Let me back it up a second.
All About Wine. Thank you for listening. Yes. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
I can hear it now.
No audio from that. Yeah, interesting.
I heard that.
Oh, you did? Okay.